Okay, hi everyone. This is the latest episode of Dialogues on Applied Channel Theory. I'm here with Nisa Tang again in New York, and I'm in Beijing. I'm Jonathan in Beijing. Last time we talked to Nisa, she talked about how the culture as a whole, or society as a whole, how it can affect or influence the channels of an entire population, right? They might reflect similar changes. Like, for example, a damp climate might affect everyone's tie-in channels, right? So a lot of people in a more damp climate might have more tie-in channel changes. And Nisa was mentioning how a lot of people in New York under this certain kind of COVID-19 times, a lot of people are reflecting Shaoyin channel changes. But what I really want to talk about today is something that Nisa always mentions when she lectures on channel examination, just about how the channels can reflect an individual story. And I really like how she talks about that. And it's really, for me, it's really fascinating kind of understanding of how channels can be used in the clinic, or what they can tell you in the clinic.
Yeah. Hi. So I often think about this, right? Because I don't know, like palpation to me is like so interesting because the channels are telling you so much, like you're really feeling what's going on in someone's internal organs, basically, with this technique. And so, I think really understanding, you know, like when you're palpating, like what is the chief complaint? And so, you're palpating all the channels and you're finding things that can support, you know, how to diagnose and treat the patient for their chief complaint. But all the other things that you're finding, like you're really getting like a picture or like a story of, you know, what created that chief complaint. It can tell you a lot about the patient's like health history. It can tell you a lot about their lifestyle. Like it's actually this really intimate thing sometimes, right? Like, because, you know, like when we palpate, like, you know, I think we all do this when we palpate and it's like, you know, you ask someone like, oh, do you burp a lot? And they're like, how do you know this? Right? Like sometimes like, and people, you know, you only sort of know your body as like, that seems normal, right? So when we palpate something, you know, we might mention it. It's like, oh, like, doesn't everybody burp a lot? And it's like, no, like, not necessarily. Or you know, like, you might feel something in their Zuiyin channel and you ask them, do you have a lot of chest tightness? And they're like, oh, I don't even know if I would call it that, but right, I guess right. So. And I've always had this. And like, you know, like, and so, I mean, one, it's a nice conversation starter with our patients, right? Because then we find things that help them be able to even explain and tell their own story. But we also just get this like really kind of like, you know, kind of like beautiful picture of that person as a whole. So, I mean, I just find it like, I mean, that's what makes our job really interesting, right? Because it's not just, you're not just seeing like, a symptom, like, you know, it really is part of this whole, whole narrative.
Do you ever find like, when a patient has like changes on the pericardium channel, like around the PC7 mm-hmm. to PC6 region, mm-hmm. maybe changes on the liver channel, like from liver 2 to liver 3. Mm-hmm. And then how do you ask them about if they're irritable or not, or if they get agitated easily? Is there a nice way to ask a person without embarrassing them?
Right. I know. And I remember like Dr. Wong would just be like, oh, you have a bad temper.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Are you irritable? Right? Yeah. Are you agitated?
Right. Yeah.
Very straight
I don't know.
Face.
Like sometimes. Yeah. I know. And we don't like, we're too young, I think, yet to have the gravitas that Dr. Wong had to pull that off. Right. But I don't know. I think it depends on the person. Right. But you know, sometimes just like, oh, if it's a first visit, it's like, oh, what do you do for a living? Like, you know, like, is it like, you know, is it stressful? Do you have long hours? You know, I don't know, like just stuff to open up the conversation. I don't know. I've been told that, like, I think people in New York, you know, this is the only place I've worked. So like people here are also like sensitive to like how you ask that. Like, I don't know, like just sort of like, you have to kind of
you can't be direct.
Yeah, what do you say?
Well, the Chinese people, I find like I can ask that, and I just like,
okay,
are you irritable? Jizao, you know, are you, you know,
yeah,
agitated? Are you like, do you have heart vexation, xin fan, or I can ask that. And like some people, I would say majority will tell you like yes or no. Some people, they won't admit to it. Like, no, I'm fine. But then you see like that there's like the tip of their tongue is really red, you know, like all these PZ7 liver 2 changes. And they're very like, you know, they're frowning, you know, like dip crease, like, you know, divot in the, in between this area.
Yeah.
Between
their
eyebrows.
Their shoulders are like.
Yeah, they're like really tense. Yeah. But I think the majority of people, at least by the second or third time, they'll be telling you like, oh yeah, I can be a little irritable.
Yeah.
Agitated.
Yeah. I guess it depends, you know, like, the majority of my practice is treating women. And so, you know, like if it is about sort of like, you know, premenstrual symptoms, like, you know, I'll just, yeah, I can be really straightforward and be like, do you feel irritable? Yeah. You know, like, snappy. But I think that's also the fun thing about palpation is because I think sometimes, and again, like not through any fault of theirs, but like, I think sometimes patients don't even know how to talk about their health. And so sometimes the palpation is this way in where like, you know, we don't even need, you know, like, it's kind of like, you know, they're irritable before they can say they're irritable, right? Like you don't even have to ask.
That's true.
Yeah. And that's something I try to remind people too when I teach channel examination is just, you know, people are, you know, people, especially if they're practicing already, they're like, it already takes me a long time. Like, you know, like, how do I add this whole other technique in? And I really think it can like really streamline your diagnosis process, you know, just it can really direct your questions. You don't have to ask everything because you can already tell from the channels what's going on.
Yeah, that's true. Definitely. Yeah.
But I sometimes like, you know, my background is as an artist. Mm-hmm. And so like, I'm very visual. So like sometimes when I'm palpating, you know how Dr. Wong would like look away.
Yeah.
Right. Sarah, so he's like, put your brain in your thumb and palpate. Mm-hmm. And I really think of it sometimes as like, you know, it's, you know, we've used that like analogy of like our thumb is like a periscope, like moving through the channel to find things. And I guess like I'm just a visual person. So like I sometimes actually feel like we're, you know, like I'm getting a visual of their channels, right? So of the river system and like, you know, like, oh yeah, this river is not flowing well, it's deficient. You know, like, look, there's a bunch of sticks and leaves. And so like, you know, in that way, I'm also sort of like, I can really kind of like see, I don't know. I feel like I can see what's going on inside.
Yeah. Just what your description now, it just reminded me when I was a kid, my dad had this boat and he bought this, like one of those sonar things and you can just find the fish.
Oh, uh-huh.
And it's like, beep, beep. And it shows you where the fish are and then it helps when you go fishing. But never worked. I remember Tim always turning it on, but it never worked. But we'd always be watching the screen, like beep.
Yeah.
We never caught any fish, but like, yeah, I think that's maybe so our fingers are like a sonar.
More
than a sonar, though.
Yeah, I don't know. How do you think of it in terms of like
channels? You mean like palpation?
Like, yeah, like
how do I just? Yeah, I think similar. Yeah, it's like, I think Dr. I remember one, like a couple of years ago, he's just describing how like he's just like dredging along the channel, right? He's feeling like the sides of the riverbanks and then he's feeling like the bottom of the riverbed, like feeling if there's any a buildup of silt in that area or a collection of, like what you're saying, rocks or sticks there. And he's just he's just slowly palpating along the river, like the crevice of the river, like the... Or even you could, or like you could say the river valley or something. Just figuring out, discovering it, and like an explorer. You're just trying to figure a thing, see what you feel.
Yeah. And I guess for me, just like as a, you know, as a clinician, then, you know, like, I mean, I feel like the biggest question is always like, there's always a mix of excess and deficiency. And how do you differentiate and understand when to treat which one? And that's where, for me, the palpation has really helped to fill in the blanks. Because I'm just thinking of like a common thing in the spleen channel, the tie-in spleen channel is like, you know, down between spleen 3 and spleen 4, there might be like tons of like kind of like, it's kind of like a little bit like dried out and like kind of mm-hmm. grainy. And so it feels like the riverbed is kind of dry, right? So mm-hmm. there's a little bit of a blood deficiency or fluid deficiency. Mm-hmm. But then as you move your way up the spleen channel, then there might be sort of like larger nodules. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like that's a really classic combination, especially in like kind of menstrual irregularities. But so you have this like very like kind of like classic, you know, there's like a blood deficiency and blood stasis. Mm-hmm. And I think by palpating, and you know, obviously this takes a little practice, but then you get a sense of like, because the changes will tell you when the excess is kind of the main thing. Mm-hmm. And then, or versus like when the deficiency needs to be addressed. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you have an example, like a case where like, you think of where?
Yeah. Like, I have one recently, like, so the period has like this kind of unusual, like, you know, sort of like, it doesn't start very smoothly. Like it kind of like spots a little bit and it's brown. And then maybe by like day 3, then things get really heavy. And, you know, the flow is kind of on the darker side. But then there's even sort of like a stop start to it. Like she describes it as like it'll be heavy for one day. And then maybe 2 days later, it seems like it's completely gone. And then 2 days later, it'll kind of flood again. And then also like drags out for a long time after, like spotting. Oh. So like the initial treatments, I was working more with like spleen 8, spleen 9 to try to regulate, because, you know, like that stop start and like the flooding and all of that, like, you know, like the stagnation just wasn't, like for me was like the main thing. And then like, as like those, like, and there were larger nodules up at like the higher points of the spleen channel towards spleen 9. But then like, so that was maybe a few cycles ago. And then, but then there's this real deficiency underneath, you know, there's a lot of actually like digestive issues, like a lot of bloating. This person like eats a lot of salads and, you know, kind of cold things, which, you know, I'm always talking about that bamboo steamer and keeping the middle warm, but you know, people like their salads. But so then like, after that, like, so we did that for like one cycle, kind of more regulating. And then, as the next cycle came around, I think we started doing like the period was different. It kind of like flowed much more. It was kind of a more succinct flow over like 4 or 5 days. And there wasn't spotting beforehand. So then like after the period was over, then I actually focused on more like, I think I did lung 9, spleen 3, spleen 4.
Was the combo.
So kind of tonifying, but also like keeping, like using the law to keep the, to kind of work on the stagnation that way by keeping the collaterals open.
So in that case, you were first like, dredging stagnation, like using, like regulating mm-hmm. stagnation with spleen 8, and then once that improved, then you went to the source points to mainly.
Yeah. Right.
Wow, that's interesting.
So yeah, I think of those, like the sort of big nodules I found on the tie-in spleen channel, like it was sort of like these big boulders in the river like not letting things flow well. Sometimes I even think like if we have to move those boulders away, get good circulation through the channel, and that might even fill in some of the deficiencies downstream from it. And then we can tonify a little bit later. But
can you talk about the bamboo steamer analogy? Or the what's it called? The bun steamer? That's what it's called,
yeah,
right?
I guess.
What do you guys call it? The bamboo steamer?
I think we call it the bamboo steamer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because when I was studying because when I was studying with Dr. Wong, he never talked about that.
Oh, really?
That analogy was the only time I heard about it was through Jason's book, and through when you guys would talk about it. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting, John. Because like my first trip to Beijing to study with Dr. Wong, so that was 2003. And so I remember like, you know, in his lectures, like he really took his time drawing the steamer and explaining it. And So for me, it really stuck. Like as a young practitioner, it really helped me in clinic just to really understand what each of the six levels is like responsible for, you know, in terms of like the energetics within each of the six channels, the sort of like environment that you have to help each channel maintain. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have like, you know, like if the yang ming is sort of like in the middle where the dumpling is actually transforming into, you know, sort of like moving from the yang ming, which is like the most external or most internal of the yang levels. And it's like mm-hmm. moving internally to react with the tai yin. So like, I even talk about this analogy with my patients, right? Helping them understand how important it is to keep their middle warm, right? And keep their digestive energy warm. So that, you know, like the body can, you know, absorb the nutrients and break things down so that it's useful in the body. Yeah, so that's interesting. So then like you only heard about it through the book.
Yeah.
So does it come up? Like, do you think about it at all? I feel like I get really into the bamboo steamer.
I think I remember when I was first starting with Dr. Wang, and then like, it was like 2008. So that was when I remember Dr. Wang had given me a copy of Jason's book. So that I remember like reading that and was like, oh, that's really interesting. But I never heard him, like from what I recall, I don't recall him like lecturing on it in detail. So, but I remember it being useful and like thinking about it. But it's not, you know, like when you're translating with for Dr. Wang and then like everything he says in those lectures, it just gets like ingrained in your brain.
Yeah.
So like the bamboo steamer, that concept is not ingrained in my brain. In the same way, all the other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess for me, it's helpful clinically because like sometimes like there's cases where I'm sort of like, actually in the last episode, when I spoke to you, like, you know, I was talking about that patient with digestive things, symptoms. And there was a lot of like Xiaoyang changes that I was addressing at the beginning. And then at some point things had shifted and based on palpation, I had shifted a treatment to the yang ming. And so clinically this can be really confusing, right? There was like sort of like damp heat diarrhea. There was a lot of like burping and reflux. It can be confusing, like Xiaoyang versus yang ming. And so sometimes like plugging it into the bamboo steamer also helps me understand, like, is this a problem of the Xiaoyang not being able to pivot properly, trapping heat inside the body? Or is it really sort of like kind of like the warming aspect of the yang ming? So anyways, like it helps me sort of make sense of things clinically.
Can you talk about like the pot part of the steamer? So there's like a pot, and then the pot is full of water, right? And then above is like the bamboo steamer, right? Where you steam the buns in, right?
Yeah. There's a good illustration of this in Dr. Wang and Jason's book. So the idea is that there's a dumpling steamer sitting on top of a metal pot with a fire underneath. Mm-hmm. And so if we start with like the fire that's warming up this whole contraption, you know, that is like the Xiaoyin, like fire. And that the Xiaoyin also represents like the potential of energy that sparks physiology. So those are the bubbles that are kind of like, so like inside the pot, there's water. And so those bubbles are like the potential of energy, right? So the Xiaoyin is really responsible for, like the heat and that energy potential is what sparks physiology everywhere else. And then, you know, coming off of the water is like this like nutritive steam. And that steam is like representative of the tie-in and, you know, like it even represents like the healthy level of dampness that's required to transform and transport, right? Mm-hmm. Like we need that steam to break things down properly and to move properly. And then as we move up through this like picture, you know, like the dumplings in the steamer, like that sort of represents the yang ming a little bit. So it's again, like we bring food, grains and liquids into our body and it has to be broken down and And, you know, Dr. Wang also talked about that close relationship of the yang ming and tai yin for, you know, building good nutrition. And then as you move up, then you have like the, so like that steam continues its way up. And so this is where the analogy is a little funny, like the bamboo steamer top is the Xiaoyang. So it kind of helps to regulate how much heat and dampness stays within the steamer to maintain the environment of the three jiaos, really, right? So it needs to, and like if it's too much, you have to move the top off to let more heat out. And so it helps to regulate. And then at the very surface, then the taiyang, the steam that's coming up would be the taiyang. So like it's responsible for warming up the surface. And where the analogy gets a little funny is that the mezuyin is sort of assigned to the pot itself. But the idea is also sort of like, you know, like the zuiyin is where sort of like the substances are sort of at their most dense and most internal, right? And then there's also that idea of like, that is where the analogy breaks down a little bit.
Okay. Right? I was just about to ask about the
zuiyin. Yeah. I don't know. How do you make sense of that part?
I don't know. I don't know. That's what I was asking. That's what I was waiting for you to get to the dream.
Because in that analogy, it doesn't really also like, it doesn't explain sort of like how energy kind of reverts back to the zuiyin, right? Like it doesn't quite capture that. So, you know, so then that's where, you know, the zuiyin is filled in with like, you know, other theory. But, but I think for, you know, that idea of sort of the dynamic nature of like the qi dynamic in the body, I find it helpful.
Yeah, it's very helpful, especially how it starts from the Shaoyin and moves up to the through the Taiyin and then up to the Ya, and then like that connection between the Taiyin, Yaming, Shaoyang, Taiyang. I think that's really I think that's very useful, definitely.
Yeah. And then also, I mean, I know like Jason loves talking about the Taiyin Taiyang connection.
Right?
So if you really think about this, and I think we've talked about it too, but you know, like. So if you think about this bamboo steamer, then that's that healthy, nutritive steam that's being built, you know, rising up to the surface to warm the taiyang, right? Like it's there's a very direct connection there. And then,
I think when I was studying with Dr. Wang, like at the like when we were talking about like the taiyin, when he talked about the taiyin taiyang connections, he liked to mention how like it's obviously like an yin and yang combination, like you know the taiyin within the yin channels opens to the exterior and the taiyang within the yang channels opens to the exterior. But the taiyang, he said like, you know, it's moving like the protective qi outwards, right? To the exterior from like the get of vitality, right? From the kidney, like it moves that qi from the kidney, the yang qi from the kidney outwards to the exterior, which becomes protective qi. And then the taiyin, he was saying it's more moving that nutritive qi to the exterior. And then I think that's how it landed. Then they form this taiyin taiyang, form that kind of yin and wei, like the nutritive protective qi kind of connection. And he was talking about that when he was treating a lot of like sweat cases and things like that, or sweating or non-sweating, or some eczema cases. I think he talked about that a bit.
Yeah, and then I mean it's all interconnected, right? Because the like even like the yang qi, right? Like the taiyin needs like the Shaoyin fire to warm that up. So it's all sort of just part of a hand in hand.
Do you use a lot of taiyin taiyang connections? Do you see or pairings, or do you see that kind of pairing in the clinic with patients? Or
I guess
do you ever use that pairing?
Yeah, I mean, I do use it like, you know, like, I guess one way I use it is like, it's almost like a blood deficient type of neck pain.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So like, again, I treat a lot of women. And so like, there's like a certain sort of like blood deficiency type where like the blood is unable to nourish the muscles properly. So they might have like a lot of like, you know, like kind of like neck and back issues. But I think so much of it is like, there's just not enough blood in general. So this might even be like, you know, like pain or headaches that get worse just before a period or during a period. And so sometimes when I treat that kind of like pain, like instead of like, you know, like I'll palpate like the Taiyang channel and I don't find much. So I might actually use like a lung 7 or like lung 9 to treat. Yeah. And in another way, and I know Jason's talked about this too, but even using Guizhitang.
Okay.
For that kind of like neck discomfort, is kind of like a blood deficiency in the muscles, kind of, it's not a sharp pain. It's like a, like all the muscles are kind of like tight.
How does it feel when you palpate the area? The local area, I mean.
The local area. Like, yeah. I feel like the muscles are, it's a combination. So they're not atrophied, but like the muscles are like, kind of like the muscles feel tight, but they're also like, it's not like those big nodules that you feel, you know, mm-hmm. It's kind of just, like the muscles themselves are kind of like small and tight. Like, so this is like a blood deficiency sort of presentation where like, they're just very, like, they're actually kind of just like thin, overall blood deficient. And actually a lot of changes in the spleen 3, spleen 4 area that again, like kind of scooped out a lot of blood deficiency, like kind of grainy almost. And then, yeah, what about you? Like the Taiyang combo.
Well, after that podcast that Jason, that discussion I had with Jason, and he was talking about using the lung channel to treat pain in the, like the scapula between the spine and the scapula on like one side of the body or like in that region, how sometimes uh-huh. it could be connected to the lung channel. So uh-huh. then actually the following day, I actually had a patient who had that presentation and like uh-huh. it was on the Taiyang, but like I can't, probably similar to what you're saying, she had a female patient too. And she actually did, like, I didn't make the connections, but she did have issues with her menses too. Uh-huh. Like irregular menstruation. And I think it was like a lot of signs of blood deficiency, like even liver blood mm-hmm. deficiency. Mm-hmm. But anyway, like she also, the main thing she was coming for was the shoulder pain that she had for a couple weeks or a few weeks. Mm-hmm. And then I palpated the Taiyang channel, hand Taiyang channel. She didn't have many changes at all, mm-hmm. which surprised me. And then I just in the back mm-hmm. of my mind, I was just talking about this with Jason. Let's just see what the lung channel has. And then she did have like lots of changes on the affected side. So the pain was on the right side of the back, mm-hmm. upper back. And her lung channel mm-hmm. on the right side also had lots of changes, like nodules and lumps. And the left side was pretty relatively clear. Mm-hmm. So I did, you know, Yefim's point pressing technique. I don't know if I should call mm-hmm. it Yefim's point pressing technique. Well, I'll just say Yefim point pressing technique. He'll be happy to hear that. And then I pressed on like a lung below lung 5, and like there's like this huge lump there. And then she was like, "Oh, mm-hmm. yeah, it's feeling better." And mm-hmm. so I was like, "Okay, I'll just use that." So I did those points, like lung 5, and she had this huge lump at spleen 8 on the leg, uh-huh. Also on the affected side. So
affected side. Okay.
Yeah. I checked the contralateral side, but I didn't feel anything.
Yeah.
And then so I think I used lung 5. Spleen 8 on the right side. And okay. then, but I also did do 19 too. I did do 19 first because like the, you know, the pain itself was on the Taiyang region. So I just did do 19 first just to relax the entire channel sinew, Taiyang channel sinew was on the back. And she did mm-hmm. say like, "Oh, it feels better." But they're still there. There's still some soreness. And then I did the distal needles, like lung 5, spleen 8 on the mm-hmm. affected side and retained the needles. 20 minutes later, pulled them out, and she's like, "Yeah, the pain had, that soreness had gone away." Mm-hmm. So I thought that was pretty cool.
And did you also do anything locally for that patient?
No, I didn't do anything.
Okay.
Oh, the only thing I did do at the end, the last thing I did was just in her armpit region, the axillary region. Mm-hmm. I did Dr. One's like that that pulling, grasping pulling technique, which is extremely unbearable and painful.
Yeah.
But she had like in like, you know, like on the posterior part of the armpit, that region, I did that grabbing, pulling technique. Mm-hmm. And she was just
like. So which direction did you pull from? So was it almost like your thumb was in the axilla and then the fingers were pulling from the back?
So I was standing, I would stand behind her and I had my fingers in the armpit.
In the axilla, okay.
Yeah, and then the thumb on the outer part, the posterior part of the axilla. And then just grabbing and pulling and. Mm-hmm. And it was really tight. They're like, the muscles there were just like tense. And I compared to the left side, which was loose, the muscles. Mm-hmm. I just kept on doing it. And she, of course, like, she's like, it's unbearable. But what I do is like, I tell them to breathe in. And And then when they breathe out, then I hold, and then I do it that way. And then you can feel it relax quite quickly. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the reason why I did that is because after I pulled out the needle, she said the soreness is gone, but see, she still had some like clicking noise with when she hit her shoulder. And I didn't know she had clicking noise because she didn't mention it before. So then I was like, okay, if there's tightness probably in this area. And I checked it and she did have tightness. And after I did that, then like the clicking would decrease.
Oh, great.
So I didn't expect that to happen, but I was like, oh, cool.
yeah. Well, that is where it's like, I don't know, like being in clinic is so great, right?
Yeah.
But I need to really incorporate more of these hand techniques. You know, like I'm envious that you were there at a time when Dr. Wong was really exploring these different hand techniques, you know? So I only got it in pieces because, you know, like every year I would visit and just see a little bit. But that's a good reminder to try some of them.
I find them useful. I mainly do the Sho technique. That was the one that I think Dr. Wong had like the clearest description of that method. And he would do it a lot on like the axillary region. Sometimes it's on the inside, the lung one region. Treating a lot of like patients with like breast lumps and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Shoulder pain too.
I think when I was in Beijing, I saw him do it with an asthma patient. I think.
Oh, right.
Right, and it turned purple, like a really.
Yeah, he did it on me once, and it was like the most excruciating pain.
Oh, really?
It's like, I don't know, it's not pain, but it's like very deep, kind of dull pain that like it's just like getting really deep in there. And it's uncomfortable, but it works.
Yeah.
For the most part, it works.
Yeah.
I actually did it on Shimo recently, Dr. Wong's wife recently.
Oh, yeah.
She was like, oh, yeah, she likes me. She likes it when I do it. And then she's like, oh, no, here we go again in the armpit area. And she's like, but then I do it. And she's like, ow. But at the same time, she's like, you're more gentle compared to Dr. Wong. You're more gentle. She's like, the way you do it is more bearable. I was like, okay.
So was it for a shoulder issue?
Yeah, she just had stiffness in her shoulder, upper back kind of region.
Okay.
So like, and she likes it. She's like, this is much better than needles. Like when you do this pulling technique, it feels better and the results are faster. And she loves it. She's like, oh, I feel so good.
Oh, good.
She's really funny. She's really hilarious. Anyway,
I guess we strayed a little bit from the initial topic.
I got a little off topic. I don't remember what we were starting out. Oh, talking about how the channels were like as a story. Was that what we're talking about?
Yeah. Sort of like the narrative that the channels sort of.
But yeah, I think it's a good tangent. There's so much to talk about, so we can talk about.
I know, and it is. These conversations are great because, I don't know. Like, I think we are just a bunch of like channel nerds. And so this is fun to talk about it.
I always show people the picture of that group photo you took of all the American students with Dr. Wong, and you made the t-shirts.
Oh, the channel fanatics?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With like Jing Luomi written on the red shirts. Yeah. I show that to all the Chinese students we teach.
Do they think it's so stupid?
They love it. They love the photos.
Yeah.
They love it too because Yefima's in it and he looks miserable in the
photo. So funny.
And I have to describe, you know, but he's a nice guy and he's a really good student. Dr. Wong really likes him. He's one of Dr. Wong's most favorite students. And...
Yeah.
But they all laugh and it's funny.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, what's exciting about, you know, like everything Dr. Wong taught us is that it's so dynamic and changing. And so it's really, it's so interesting to hear how you're using it and, you know, gives me ideas to take back to clinic.
And same with me, I think what we're saying is like the kinds of patients we're treating are probably different too, right? Like the environment is different, the society is different, the culture is different. So I think the kind of groups of patients we treat are probably different too. So it's kind of interesting to share all this different knowledge from different parts of the world. And and like your experience, you know, you've been using this for what, like 17 years now?
Yeah.
So I think it's amazing now that it's Yeah, lots to learn.
yeah, lots to learn. That's like that's the only takeaway after even 17 years. It's like there's still so much to learn. Yeah.
Okay, so thanks, Nisa, for talking again. It was great talking again. And
yeah, thanks, John.
And we'll talk soon.
We'll talk again.
Very soon, yeah. Okay. Bye.
Bye.